Welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Fred Grandy filling in for Frank Gaffney today, and we welcome back to our program Daniel Pipes, the president and founder of the Middle East Forum. Daniel is also the Taub Distinguished Visiting Fellow at the Hoover Institute of Stanford University and has co-authored a piece recently in the Washington Times and the National Review about what is really happening with the election process in Egypt. And Daniel, it's interesting because as I look at most of the commentary about Egypt, it falls into two categories. One, it's a significant shift in the leadership there and a major change. And then you see guys like Bret Stephens in the Wall Street Journal saying, no, it's just symbolic. Now comes your piece and you say, wait a minute, the whole process is illusory. Could you elaborate a little bit on that?
Could I start with a bit of background?
Sure.
The Egyptian free officers took power almost 60 years ago to the day in July 1952. They threw out the constitutional monarchy and they imposed a military junta, which has been ruling ever since, not always so obviously, but Nasser, Sadat, Mubarak, and now Tantawi are all the military rulers. For various reasons, the military leadership wanted to get rid of Mubarak, and that's what it did in early 2011, using the premise of the Tahrir Square demonstrations. The military is in charge, has been in charge. It is dominating the economy. Obviously, it has the guns. It is in charge of the judiciary and so forth. The Islamists have a chance. They have a certain popularity. They have been allowed by the military to reach the presidency. But it's just a chance. The president, Mohamed Morsi, has no powers, no parliament, no cabinet. He's a figurehead at this point. As one Egyptian compared him, he's like Queen Elizabeth. He really doesn't have any powers. Now, it's not to say he couldn't get them. It's not to say that he couldn't, if he's clever and articulate, manage to arouse Egyptians, including the soldiers in the military, to turn against the military officer corps. It's a possibility. Not rated as maybe 20% possibility. Overwhelmingly more likely is that the military will continue to rule. And what we've seen over the last couple of weeks since Morsi came to office is a continuing series of small-scale skirmishes. For example, where will his swearing-in take place? Who's going to sit where? And the like. And most dramatically, he decided he's going to reconvene parliament, and a couple of days later he folded. So far, the military has been winning these skirmishes. It's not preordained. They could lose, but I would say the military, as it has for the last 60 years, is governing Egypt.
And what will happen with the Egyptian parliament? Will it be seated at some point? Will there be elections? Will it be an Islamist majority? How much or how little will the Supreme Council of the Armed Forces allow a real plebiscite to take place in that country?
Well, let's start by noting that there has been a presidency and a parliament and a constitution all throughout these 60 years. So the form is always there. The question is, as you're asking, how much substance will there be? My expectation is there won't be a whole lot. The presidency was until now the key position under Nasser, Sadat, and Mubarak. I don't think it is today. The parliament was always a rather minor institution. The prime ministry was a minor institution. I suspect these will continue to be today, but there is new friction. In other words, the really important thing that happened that we saw in early 2011 is that a lot of Egyptians are fed up with the tyranny, the backwardness, the corruption, and basically miserable life that one leads under a military fascistic dictatorship. And they're rebelling against it. Now, how far they're going to get, I don't know. But eventually, I do think they will prevail. This military dictatorship will not be there in perpetuity.
Well, in terms of the immediate future, does the Morsi government, such that it is, serve as a possibly convenient scapegoat for SCAF if the economy continues to tank?
Exactly. I don't think the military is that Machiavellian, but I do think it has somehow stumbled into this, whereby Egyptians are largely looking to Morsi as the leader, and yet, as you note, the economy is tanking. Most specifically of all, the Egyptian population derives more than half of its caloric intake from imported food. Imported food means hard currency. Hard currency is disappearing at a very fast rate. There will come a moment before too long, I think, when there is not enough to buy food, at which point there will be all sorts of trouble of the most basic sort. And there he will be, Morsi, as president. And maybe the military leadership, SCAF, Supreme Council of the Armed Forces, will manage to elude the blame for it. I don't know.
Well, in the meantime, will the military allow Morsi to proceed with some of the perhaps, I guess I would describe them as either cultural, educational, or religious modifications, a stricter Sharia law? I'm sure you've seen the stories about possibly tearing down icons of Egyptian tourism, like the Sphinx or the pyramid. Do you see any of that happening? Will there be any kind of cultural control on Egyptian society that will be ceded to the Muslim Brotherhood to at least keep them at bay for a while?
Well, if one looks at the long-term trend of the military dictatorship over the 60-year period, there has been increasing Islamist presence and power, and that is likely to continue. However, something as dramatic as taking down the pyramids of the Sphinx, I would find very surprising if it took place, both for Egyptian nationalist reasons and for cultural reasons and touristic reasons and so forth. Yes, you could knock down the Sphinx in a few minutes, but the pyramids are pretty big. Some vandals could go and destroy the Sphinx. Yes, that's possible, but not the pyramids.
What would you expect the relationship with Israel to be going forward under this relationship?
You know, in retrospect, it's often being said that there was an alliance between Mubarak and the Israelis and so forth. I don't think so at all. It's very cool and quite hostile relations at many levels, in terms of international relations, in terms of economy, Gaza, anti-Semitism, and so forth. This was no warm relationship, and it's not warm now. The question is, how much cooler, how much more hostile will it get? I don't think too much. Tantawi, the effective ruler of Egypt, was a soldier in 1973. He saw what the Egyptian military can do vis-a-vis the Israeli. Now, that's a long time ago. Things have changed. Maybe the Egyptians are better off. But I think he and his fellow officers are keen to avoid a conventional military confrontation with the Israelis.
So you don't see any dismantling of the Camp David Accords, at least from a foreign policy point of view?
I would be very surprised if they took that step.
Well, then let me ask you this about where the Muslim Brotherhood itself is. Are they comfortable with this arrangement? Do they fully understand that they are little more than kind of a puppet government, and can they proceed on that, or are they watching and waiting the situation as well and looking for a way to kind of maximize advantage themselves?
Well, both of those. Surely they fully realize that they have the trappings of power without the substance of it, and at the same time, they're trying to change that. Now, unfortunately, from their point of view, Mohamed Morsi is not the best representative. The man who should have been their candidate, Hayat al-Shatr, who was disbarred for technical reasons, and he is someone able to arouse crowds and make strategy and so forth, but he is behind the scenes at this point, and Morsi is actually the one in front, and he's not very impressive. So they have the liability there. But yes, no question, they are closer to power than they've ever been in their 84 years of existence, and they are doing their best to make the best of it.
Well, in the final seconds that we have, Daniel, whither U.S. appropriations for Egypt? How much or how little should we give to this new government, such as it is? And what kind of conditions should we impose upon that money, if any?
The large amounts of American money going to Egypt date back to the Camp David Accords, to a completely different era for completely different reasons. I've been against the continuation for many years now. I've seen them as not just a waste of money, but encouraging bad habits. At this point, however, given all the turmoil in Egypt and the economic precipice that the country is at, I wonder if it's a good idea to cut off that money right now, because we could be blamed for the problems that come. Let's just continue with this $1.5 billion for another bit. I don't like it, but I worry that if we were dramatically to cut it off, we could be paying a higher price for it. So for now, I would say continue with it. My main focus right now in terms of U.S. policy would be to get the military to open up for the political participation in a slow, gradual, modest, cautious way. In other words, I agree with George W. Bush's efforts dating back to 2002 and 2003 to open up the Middle East politically, to democratize. But I deeply disagree with his impatience and his methods. It should have been done slowly, with the building of civic society, freedom of speech and minority rights and rule of law and voting for Doc Hatcher. And then over 10, 20 years, building up to full democracy. That's what I'd like to see start now. I wish that started with Mubarak in 1981. All right, 31 years later, let's start now at least. That's the only way forward.
Well, hopefully those lessons will be learned, if not by this administration, by the next one. Daniel, we'll have to leave it there. We've been talking with Daniel Pipes, the president and founder of the Middle Eastern Forum. His latest piece in the Washington Times is Egypt's real ruler, Mohammed Tantawi. Thanks for being with us on Secure Freedom Radio.